We have one paper outstanding on Goodwill and Impairment, which is 18A. Before I hand over to the team, I would just like to probably manage some expectations as to what it is that we are trying to achieve here, because we had some considerations back and forth as to what is it that we're trying to achieve versus are we really locking the board into any preliminary decisions that we can't really step away from. So I think what the purpose of this was is to address the feedback that the board had received on the preliminary reviews document, and especially on some of the disclosures that the board had proposed. In order to address the pushback that we have received on some of this, we want to explore the best ways how to address that in actually setting the disclosure requirements and probably exemplifying those by having illustrative examples. But in order to allow the staff doing that, they need some steer, right? So they need a starting point, and we need to agree, at least on a tentative basis, something that they could then go away and draft the examples that would then be tested with users and preparers. So it's not about, do I like these proposals, or do I think it has to be written that way, and this is exactly what the standard will look like in its final sense, but it's really an interim step in order to test whether the disclosures that the staff are thinking about might work in practice with both preparers and users, and let them opine on those. Let's see feedback, and then let's take a more robust decision based on that feedback. So it's an intermittent step. It's not tying anybody in at this stage. It's more really to give guidance to the staff and let us progress. So whenever you see in the paper the word, there's a staff recommendation and me asking a vote, the vote is not there to say, the board has decided and can't change. This is rather a tentative view, subject to further outreach and further research to be done, but to give the staff a starting base. That's the purpose of this, really. So just want to set this expectation right. With that happy note, I pass over to Craig.
Yes, thanks, Andreas. You've taken away most of the things I was planning on saying.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway.
Okay.
So agenda paper 18A asks the board questions about particular aspects of your preliminary review to require entities to provide quantitative information about synergies expected from a business combination. And as Andreas has said, a lot of the reasons we're bringing this now is because we are in the process of developing some staff examples that we hope to then go away and test with preparers and users and auditors, as the board asked us to last month, to try and assess some of those practical concerns. And that includes that quantitative information about expected synergies could be commercially sensitive. And we are going to present all of that feedback to the board at a future meeting. So the specifications and clarifications that we asked for in this particular meeting are on parts of the preliminary views that we think were not really discussed in detail during the development of the discussion paper, and therefore we really would like a little bit more direction to try and illustrate the board's preliminary views here. So there's kind of four topics in this paper. So the first is whether the board should define synergies. The second is about the level of aggregation at which the board expects quantitative information about expected synergies to be disclosed. The third is about what the board meant by when synergies are realized. And the fourth is some other comments. And so I propose we discuss each of those topics in turn. So looking at the first question as to where the board should define synergies, paragraphs 14 to 24 of our paper include our analysis on that. So the first question for the board is whether you agree with our recommendation not to define synergies.
Okay. Can I see? The people must do have any comments. Yes, they do. That's the answer. Starting with Tom.
Yeah, so I support this. I just have kind of a question and or something I'd like to encourage. I noticed, for example, in paragraph 20, there's a reference to BC313. And then in paragraph 21, I think there's another paragraph to BC313. And I would just like to encourage you to kind of be really precise in referencing. So the first one is a reference to component 3 in BC313, and the second one is a reference to component 4 in BC313. And I think that's, that paragraph and the basis is a very good one, and we should just always be precise. So then also just the juxtaposition of those two paragraphs, people might be confused. But overall, I support it. And my question is, while I support not having explicit definition of synergies, do you plan to kind of carry forward and at the end of the day kind of preserving the stuff that's in that BC 313?
Yeah, I think I'm going to propose to change what's in BC already.
Okay. Sorry, and could you say that again?
I said we wouldn't propose to change anything that's in BC
313. And then if you do go to talk about components, I'll just throw this in here. One of the things, as much as I liked that paragraph and it goes through all the things at the time, there was an article by, I guess, Johnson and Petroni that led to that paragraph, and it's in FASB's literature and our literature, and it goes through all the things that might be in goodwill. And the one thing that isn't, and I'd kind of encourage you to maybe try and fill this gap, conceptual gap, just somewhere down the road, are deferred taxes. If you read those things and don't think about deferred taxes, which can be really material, because goodwill ultimately is just a mathematical calculation. And you can sort of find and draw lines from those components to everything in a reconciliation of goodwill, except the deferred taxes one. And I went and looked, for example, in Kraft Heinz that was cited a lot in the FASB responses. A lot of people use that as a nice example. And I just, the increase in deferred tax liabilities was 75% of the increase in goodwill. So it's a non-trivial element when you go through that math. And just to maybe think about, you know, what does that conceptually mean if just as a background thing as you go through the thinking. But I'm with you because it is way too, it'll be a horrible rabbit hole.
Thank you. Jin Chao?
I just want to say I support staff's proposal not to define the synergy. I think there is, in practice, there is a common understanding what the synergy means. Even if we are going to define it, when I look at the proposal in paragraph 23, I don't think this proposal would help a lot, because paragraph 23A say that synergy arising from business combination. Okay, no problem. B is that, okay, combined value will be greater than the sum of the value, you know, those entities if we consider separately. It's common understanding, you know, why we needed to do business combination. Actually, people will demand further. What's the value mean? You know, whether it's value, fair value or the value, other things, or it's the value about those financial, you know, indicators, but such as revenue or cost, something like that. So I worry about if we would like to define, maybe end up cause a lot of, you know, further questions, you know, further issues coming out. So from this perspective, I fully agree with staff's recommendation not to define the synergies. I think practice totally understand what synergy means. Yeah.
There.
Thank you, Andreas. And thank the staff again for preparing, bringing the paper for discussion. I agree with the staff recommendation of not defining synergies based on the arguments included in paragraph 16. As it is in paragraph 15, the term synergy is not used in IFRS 3 only. It is also used in IFRS 13, IS 36, and IS 38, and the term is not defined there. And I believe that, and it is in paragraph 16, when you say that there may already be, as Jin Chao also mentioned, a common understanding of synergies. And I think that defining the term now actually, in my view, can bring some unintended consequences, especially because it's not referred to in IFRS in the context of a business combination only. On the other hand, I would increment the explanation about synergy and business combination, incorporating part of the word used in paragraph 22, despite Jin Chao said that might not be very helpful, but maybe in the basis for conclusion might help some of the preparers. Thank you.
Mr. Deo, Mary?
I also agree with not trying to define synergies, as Tadeo said, for the reasons set out in the papers, but also I think it would be a disproportionate effort in terms of what we're trying to achieve in this project, not just in terms of as a precursor to developing the examples, but also I think even for the longer term. So support that. But I have a couple of howevers that I attach to that. One is a however, I think, and I think this lines up with what Tadeo was just saying, and also Tom, that it would be good, and I'm going to steal wording from Sue, to have a bit of chat in whatever document we ultimately do. And I think in guidance for people looking at the illustrative examples, that talk about the types of synergies that may occur. It isn't trying to define them, but it's, and not all synergies will be present in all transactions, but just to bring out that it could include, for example, deferred taxes. That's one thing. And then the second relates in part to something that's in the other comments. If you look at page 13, I think we do have to be clear about whether we're asking people to give information about the synergies that were factored into the deal pricing, which I think is what's implicit in the discussion paper, or whether we're asking them to provide updated information about synergies, let's say, at the time they actually complete the business combination. And maybe for the examples, we can say we've identified these two that I think the included in the deal pricing is more consistent with the thinking in the paper, but asking information about which is less costly to prepare, I don't know. But I think we have to say it's one, or ultimately we're going to have to say it's one or the other, because they could be quite different objectives in terms of what you're disclosing. You have to be clear of which it is. So I'd suggest flagging that as something we have to decide. I don't know if you want to decide one way or the other for the IE. And I think we should have a bit more chat about what are the types of things that would be included in synergies.
Thank you, Mary. Bruce?
Thanks very much. I don't necessarily disagree with the decision not to do it in there, but I guess that there was one question, then one comment. The first question just was, we talk a lot about this being a very understood term, and I was quite interested if we'd had any feedback from non-English speaking countries as to whether they see it the same way as we do. And I do appreciate we use it throughout our first, so that's why I'd be loath to take it on as trying to define it, because I think then we've got to look at it broader. But I just was interested in whether synergy was something that, if there'd been no comment and wasn't brought up, then fair enough. The other thing I was just going to say was, when I kind of read through the stuff, there's some really interesting analysis here of what people are talking about. Especially I like the one in paragraph 21, where they're talking about just different ways of looking at synergies and that. And I just wondered if some of that couldn't be better reflected in the basis. I don't think this is a huge thing, but when I look at what's in 313, it's there, but it's kind of part of the going concern discussion. And I just think that there's a lot of good stuff that could give people a steer if they were struggling with this that we've got there that could potentially be in there. So I haven't distilled exactly which ones I think, but I just think it's something maybe you guys want to think about. I think we could boost what's in 313 at the moment to include some of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Lika?
Thank you. Because first of all, to retain the proposal in discussion paper as much as possible, because the deliberation of package of disclosure is still under in process, and we might revisit in the future. So it's probably helpful for stakeholders to looking at the same thing as much as possible. But the problem when I faced discussing with our stakeholders in connection with discussion paper was that there was no consistent common understanding of the level of disaggregation. So that was the next question. So I wouldn't like to comment further. But so that kind of things need to be clarified. But other than that, I think make it consistent as much as possible. And another thing is diversity exists in practice due to practical reason to reflect management insight and perspective. So it's a more natural thing, I think. And then if defining the synergies more clearly might restrict the information that could be provided to the users of financial statements. So, I would like to suggest the staff to ask our stakeholders how diverse understanding or definition they would apply in practice. Is that a case by case, depending on the acquisition, or maybe company has a specific policy of the synergies?
So I support the staff's recommendation, first of all, on the first part and not including the definition. If we think about strengthening the definition by including some of the text, I did want to mention that the second part of the recommendation takes a step that I think we should take consciously rather than subconsciously, which is it moves to value versus performance, which is a jump, I think, that we should make explicitly. There are certainly deals where the rationale is we have a price to earnings of 16 and we're acquiring a company with a price to earnings of 12. Therefore, we've generated value because we'll now be valued at 16 rather than 12. But I think when many users and many preparers think of synergies, they actually think of performance, whether it's operating performance, financial performance. And it would add a layer of complexity as we think about the levels of synergies that we're asking be disclosed if we move from a performance definition to a value definition.
Nodding. I see no further name tags up. Are we then ready to vote? I haven't heard any major disagreement with that. Can I see a show of hands who agrees with the staff recommendation?
11.
I abstain on this one.
That's a no then. That's a no. So that's 11?
Huh. Right. Over to you, Greg.
Thank you. So the second topic is about what level of quantitative information the board intended to require entities to provide applying the board's preliminary view. And so your response on this topic is going to be particularly useful in developing and testing our staff examples. And we're going to provide the board with feedback on the staff examples at a future date. But as we explained earlier, a direction from the board in this particular matter will really help us to ensure that we've prepared those examples and are conducting outreach with the preparers and the users and the auditors on the basis that the board intended. So paragraphs 25 to 35 provide the board with our analysis on this topic. And our question is whether the board's initial view is to agree with our recommendation that subject to further research to assess concerns about commercial sensitivity, for example, entities should disclose information about synergies at one level below total expected synergies. So at the level of things like total cost synergies, total revenue synergies, for example. And so I'll hand over to the board to discuss.
You answered part of my question that I would have had as to what specifically you mean one level below expected total expected synergies, because that wasn't entirely clear, but by breaking it up, I think it becomes clearer. Okay. Any views? Mary?
My comment, largely what yours was, once I'd gotten through paragraph 34 and understood what the staff was recommending, I supported that idea, especially in the context of developing examples to test and to give us better information to assess concerns about commercial sensitivity versus usefulness of information. but saying at one level below total expected synergies just communicated zero to me. So I think even when we think about update for this meeting, if there's any more specific way to phrase it, that would be good so people have some clue from the summary.
Yeah, because we're using the same language, for instance, in segment reporting. One level below, the question is, okay, is that in an organization or mm-hmm. how does that relate to it? Exactly. Thank you. Jin Chao?
Yes, our first point is exactly the same as Andreas and Mary said, what's how to communicate one level below. But I support the staff's proposal to test, to focus on revenue synergy or cost synergy or other synergy to test whether the commercial sensitivity could be addressed through this way. But I have a question because we are going to test what kind of expected synergy we are going to ask those companies to disclose. So whether we are going to focus on total revenue itself or total cost itself, or actually we should focus on total revenue increase or total cost saving rather than total cost itself. So because if we look at the synergy, actually we like to look at how much cost will decrease, how much revenue will increase. This is the synergy we are trying to capture, rather than look at the total number of the revenue and the total cost. So I just want to clarify, which number actually we are really looking at. So that it's also relevant to what's the meaning of one level below total expected synergies which we are focusing on. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it is the effect on revenue or the effect on cost, for example, so whether cost will decrease by a particular amount or whether revenues will increase by a particular amount.
Thank you. That will be helpful.
Thank you. Tom?
I have a question, I think. So would you... That's my question. Would you expect the sum of the one level below synergies to sum to the total synergies, or would it be applied in such a way that you would look one level below and you would disclose, say, cost synergies if they were material, but you might be silent on other synergies if they weren't material? So is there an expectation that you would sort of be complete, that all the synergies would be displayed with a number?
So I think it comes in part down to Mary's question as well, in terms of perhaps if you articulated this in the way of aggregating particular types of synergies by nature, for example, and then you'd probably be looking at whether that aggregation is material, so whether total cost is material. And if that's material, you disclose that. But if total revenue maybe wasn't material, probably you wouldn't disclose that one, for example.
So you wouldn't necessarily sum to the total.
I don't think.
Just being somewhat of a devil's advocate, suppose I do them where they're all not material, but the total is material. Do I not have to disclose the total?
Well, I think you'd probably have to consider whether that meets the disclosure objective of understanding the benefits that management expected from the acquisition. And probably, I think you might conclude that it doesn't. You need to give more information.
Okay. Leave it there for the moment. Bruce.
Thanks very much. So we're starting this. I guess my starting point in terms of where I am is I think we need to understand that the companies have this information. So I'm actually not particularly concerned about whether the information is there or not, because I think the reality is, we know that companies have got detail way more than this. If they're doing a material acquisition, they've taken this thing, sliced and diced and done what they need to do. So my experience is generally the information is there. I guess the challenge I have with this, the approach, and I'll bear with me as I get through it, is I worry that we're kind of going out there with a question asking people if they are half pregnant or not. And what I mean by that is you're kind of saying, well, we're looking at these, but we'll get to the commercial sensitivity later. The problem with that is, to me, that we've heard this from preparers, we've heard this at the GPF, we're hearing this continually, that this is the single biggest issue as to why they don't want to give these disclosures. If an acquisition was not commercially sensitive and wasn't sensitive. Users will, preparers will give us information. It's there, they're happy to share it, and they'll give it out. The challenge becomes that when they cross that line, it becomes quite a substantial issue. And the worry about it there, it was explained to me very clearly by somebody, was they said, what maybe we're not appreciating in this, in looking at this, is the fiduciary duties of the directors to the company. And I mean, I've had people say to me, if we went and pursued this, they believe that there'd be in breach of whatever law, and most companies' acts have got that, where they're saying their fiduciary duties would kick in, because they're saying some of this information could be so commercially sensitive, it's actually going to damage the value of the business. So I think when we look at doing these disclosures, the reason I don't think we can divorce the two, when we look, and by the way, I do like the idea of doing the models disclosures. So on that point, I'm happy to pursue that. But my worry would be that if I put that in front of a preparer and say, we want you to look at these disclosures, without kind of the elephant in the room being, but don't worry, these are the commercial sensitivity we'll deal with later, that they're not going to be objectively able to look at this and say, yes, we're happy to give this, because the immediate response will be, well, I'm not going to give this because it's commercially sensitive. And I guess what worries me about that is that we're going to end up in a situation where we're literally going to have a situation where I almost think on this one we're going to have a lot of the users saying, great, we love the disclosure, we want it all the way there. We're going to have the preparers saying, we're just not going to give this. And we're kind of going to come back here and have an obvious answer in terms of having done this field work and saying, well, we all knew that answer before we went down there and did that. So. And by the way, I think in the paper where we've raised it in paragraph 31, I don't feel we've got enough evidence here to me that mitigated that concern. We've just said, well, we think the qualitative information is not commercially sensitive. Okay, well, on what basis have we kind of mitigated the concern that's been raised by our stakeholders? So in kind of trying to be proactive and taking this forward, I appreciate what Andreas said in the tee-up, and I think we all appreciate that we need to move forward. We can't just sit here and say this is not there. So when looking at doing these disclosures, I would say, first off, I think we need to make very clear that we do appreciate that there is a level of commercial sensitivity. And to me, some of the model disclosures we're going to do should illustrate that. So part of this is not just saying, are you happy giving this disclosure or not giving this disclosure? To me, what we should be doing is testing the limits to which we can see people are prepared to go. So have that range, something from, which isn't really good, to something that's kind of standing there naked and showing us everything and saying, look, guys, where do we see the issues? What is the cutoff? Because I think the answer you're going to find, most of them are going to turn around and say, there will be that overriding factor that most companies are going to have a point where they say, we're just not prepared to do it at that level. And so my view would be, I'm happy to support going out and doing the work. The way we phrased question two, we'll get to later, I'm sure, but I'm not happy, because I don't think I don't want to say we're agreeing with this to go forward unless there's commercial sensitivity, because I just think we're asking half the question here. And I think most companies will tell you, yes, we all agree we'll give that if it's not sensitive. The issue in the room is that sensitivity. So as long as when we're going out and doing that testing, we make it very clear that we're trying to also test the extent to which that sensitivity exists, then I can support that direction of what we're doing. But I just want to make sure that we're not going to put in preparers who are going to say, if this is what you guys are proposing, we're not interested, and we hit a brick wall, and then we actually don't get any value out of doing the field work.
Because it's the subject.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bertrand? I don't think it was me.
Huh?
Are you sure it's
yes.
Me?
Yes, yes.
I think the question is effectively not well phrased. That's a minimum to say, subject to further research to assess whether concerns about commercial sensitivity remain. I mean, do you really think it will disappear all of a sudden? Of course it is there. As Bruce said, I fully agree with him. Commercial sensitivity will not disappear. The problem, we discussed that at last week's GPF meeting, and the question that were asked to GPF members and the answers they provided goes in the direction we are requested by the synergies disclosure, by the appreciation of the operating performance of an acquisition or the financial operating and financial performance of an acquisition. We are requested then to provide budget and plan figures. The problem is, of course, not to provide those figures in the notes to the financial statements or elsewhere. The problem is, of course, not that it's whether or not it's a forward-looking information or not. The problem is absolutely not this one. The problem is providing those figures which provide an insight to the strategy of the company. And the problem is there, providing an insight into the future strategy of the company for the next 5 years. The commercial sensitivity is there. It will always remain. And the problem is not providing the information to users. The problem is providing the information to competitors. That's really where the concern is. And similarly to Bruce, I totally appreciate what Andreas said at the introduction of the meeting, but I would tend to be a bit doubtful on the direction we are taking. We are taking here. I'm very happy to provide you a direction to test the disclosures. That's a fair question you're asking board members. But I quite don't like the idea that we have begun since October with the questions on whether or not conceptually the information could be provided in the notes to the financial statements. And now we are building an additional block of around synergies. Then next time it will be probably on the management of the performance of the acquisition. And always, but wait, we'll discuss commercial sensitivity later on. The commercial sensitivity is the issue, is there, won't disappear. You mentioned in paragraph D10 of this agenda paper, those disagreeing include some accounting firms, some national standard setter, and most preparers that commented on the topic. Do you really think that they will have changed their minds since they commented? And I would be very happy if you could go back to those preparers that commented to you in the comment letters that they were in disagreement, to test with those preparers the disclosures you would like to test with a couple of preparers, because I think it will then enlarge the sample of your testing and probably provide an interesting feedback for the board members. So if I perfectly appreciate why you're asking a question to get a direction and to get a feedback on the direction you're taken, I'm absolutely not comfortable with the with making decisions on this issue, which are building after the decisions we've already made in October, probably with the decisions we will make next time. And we are adding piece by piece decisions that lead us to a direction. And the problem is, effectively, the end point of this direction will always be commercial sensitivity. And commercial sensitivity, as I defined it, i.e. not providing to competitors an insight into the strategy of the company, which is an element that is provided in budget and plan figures. That's so I'm really not comfortable with the decision making process. I'm absolutely not comfortable with disregarding commercial sensitivity in making those building block decisions. And I would prefer that we make decisions at the end when we have an holistic approach on this issue. And I have, once again, no problem that you test to preparers. And I would like very much to hear about most preparers that commented on this topic and that disagreed with the proposal contained in the discussion paper.
Yeah, just maybe one thing to clarify, and thank you for your helpful comment, but maybe just one thing to clarify on the examples and how we'll be using the examples. So we are developing these examples, and we need some steer from the board to help us in developing these examples and how we illustrate the disclosures that the board expected in the preliminary view. But the purpose of these examples is to test the practical concern about, for example, like especially commercial sensitivity. So we see this more as a step or a building block that we need in order to do our testing on commercial sensitivity itself. It's not something that detached from commercial sensitivity, and we are saying make the decision now and there'll be a separate decision on commercial sensitivity later. They're very interlinked and we just need some steer. So just to come in and clarify that.
Thank you.
as to why we are asking it and why we phrased the question the way we've done in terms of saying subject to further research, just recognizing that interrelationship between them and how we'll be using this decision in the next phase as we do our testing.
So question two makes it sound more like a step than maybe is intended.
So we're saying we're fully pregnant, Bruce, not just half pregnant?
Thanks. I was going to talk about half pregnancy later, so you stole my note. So I agree with the staff's proposal. I think this is the right step to take in terms of measuring where commercial sensitivity arises and getting detailed feedback, because I think what we saw in the feedback we received is that there's a lot of views about what we were asking for, and we need to clarify both what our expectations were and then what people are comfortable with. So I think that's an important step. I will go back to my earlier comment, though, and say that as we work through this, we haven't defined synergies, but we're talking about one level below. And if we've set up a reporting disclosure around operating profit, we should really think about whether our synergy definition should match up. So if we're going to be a little bit more explicit about what one level down means, it might be useful to say revenue, operating cost, and other synergies if we're going to stick with performance definitions.
Nick?
Thanks. I think this is a helpful step forward to really test the issues here. I think it's appropriate. I think it's reasonable. I think it's about bringing evidence back to the board. Now, these are also proposals. These were proposals which were in the discussion paper. These aren't new proposals. We're just testing how those can or could work in practice. It may be worth including some further examples of, in terms of what's typically seen. So the most obvious ones are revenue and operating cost synergies, but things I would often see are working capital, CapEx, tax and finance. Not in all circumstances, but they're not atypical categories, and that may just help build out that sense of one level below. So I think that would be useful. And they're important because they are, I think, they're different in nature and probably use as value some of those categories differently. So that's where the information comes. And I guess why users are interested in it is because they have a fiduciary duty as well in terms of the money which they're responsible to manage. This is recognised as a place where you can easily lose value for your clients, and you're trying to do your best to protect that fiduciary duty. And in part of that, I'd say actually understanding the company's future strategy is probably where I start. You know, that's my beginning point to all of this. And again, looking for evidence to build that out. So I welcome the approach. I think it's good that we can test this in a practical sense. And that will then provide further evidence in terms of how we proceed from here.
So I also agree with this as a useful next step. And I just wanted to make a few comments about the process and an approach, but also clearly we need to be careful with our messaging because people are very sensitive to this whole commercial sensitivity point, and we don't want to create an impression that we're just going to ignore all these comments and just bulldoze people into submission and, you know, and I think that's partly the reaction we're getting. And so it just emphasises a different sort of sensitivity in our communication that we're going to have to be really careful with when we go out and talk to people. But the bigger point I wanted to make is sometimes our job is really, really hard. And this is a situation where our job is really, really hard because we've got users who really want this information. We've got preparers who really have probably legitimate reasons why they're really concerned about this information. And our job is to really sort of to try and really carefully unpick an understanding of why investors need the information, what it is they need to understand, what preparers are concerned about and why, and we're trying to take baby steps to do that analysis to see if we can find common ground and really understand the issues. And we really need to try and all just sort of stay calm, if I could say that nicely, and be as neutral as possible in this analysis because we're fact-finding. And part of what I think we're trying to fact-find with this is, okay, let's make sure we're all talking about the same thing. This is the level of analysis we meant. Did we have a difference of you know, understanding with the discussion paper? Maybe the answer is no, and it doesn't help, but let's make sure we understand that. let's understand if we go down to this level, but it's not, you know, it's still quite high level, but it's down a level, does that help with the synergies? But also let's make sure that it actually is going to be useful information for investors, because the thing I worry about sometimes when we're trying to find compromises is we might end up imposing costs on preparers and delivering information that isn't so useful to investors either, and I think that's the worst outcome we can possibly get. So let's make sure we've got an eye on that as well. And I think that the really tricky thing that at some point we are going to have to judge is once we've got once we've got a better understanding of what all the different views are, we do have a common understanding, we're all talking about the same thing and we gather the different feedback we've got from the different sides, at some point we're going to have to judge what the appropriate call is, because we do have this difficult situation where I think Bruce rightly points out directors have got particular obligations they've got to look out for, but also investors have to make investment decisions, and we need to make sure they understand the risks and the opportunities that they're taking on, and how do we get that balance right? And it's really hard to do sometimes, but I think we just have to be as neutral, and we're trying to be methodical, and I think the staff are doing a really good job at trying to take us through the baby steps so we can have a, let's get all the facts in front of us and let's all just sit back and, okay, reflect and make a decision. And to me, that's what you're asking us to do. And I think it's the right process.
Lisa.
Thank you.
I think I agree with Pat's mention, and I want to build on Pat's mention, especially because I agree with what Bruce already mentioned, that the stakeholder might need a kind of the range of the information. But I rather think maybe we can provide a shared understanding of the level of the information we illustrate, not we propose, we illustrate at this moment for discussion, and ask the stakeholder whether that level is too much or too little. And probably if they are practitioner, they have a much better understanding of the fact, the level of information they can provide and they can't provide. So I think we should carefully communicate that point. And I also think another thing is we talk a lot about the commercial sensitivity, but I don't think that is the only issue we are facing right now. Because I understand some companies' management continuously use the synergy information even after the acquisition, and they monitor and they adjust the number to make it more accurate. But some companies don't do the exact same thing. They just use that information when they determine the purchase price of the acquisition, and then they just move on to use the different measures and the metrics. In that case, if we ask that information and then they have to include that information as part of the financial statement, the auditor might have a question about the accuracy of that information. Yeah, it might be helpful information for the user to understand the management thought process about how to determine the purchase price, but that information is useful, but that information will not direct connection to create a strategy for the future development of that companies. So I think in that case, probably if we ask the disclosure about the detailed quantitative information about the synergy, that will be really costly for the company and might be costly because of the auditor face a lot of difficult question about how to audit those information. So I think the staff, I hope the staff ask a lot of questions, but the difficulty, don't stick to the just a question about the commercial sensitivity. And also I want staff to make sure if the company use the synergy information even after acquisition, and if they stop using that, why? And if they continue using that, how? I hope that might help future discussion about how to work on this disclosure.
Thank you.
can I just ask for a clarification? Just in terms of what we're asking at the moment is only for synergies at the date of acquisition. That's that. Okay, so you're just saying there may be more stuff that we can ask about at that time, but the proposal is literally at the date and no more. Okay, understood. Yes. Thank you.
But I thought that it might be more useful that the information can be...
Okay. Mary?
Further comments on two aspects. One is the articulation of what we're trying to do in terms of the technical design, and the second is more communication and messaging. So as I think about where we've gotten to in our discussions both today and, you know, thinking about the discussion paper preliminary views, I think we're saying what we're trying to test is something that says, in order to understand what expectations regarding synergies were, and I'm struggling with the words, factored into purchase price, because it could be that you said we expect synergies of 75 to 100, and you were able to negotiate a deal that doesn't, that doesn't take you to your absolute top of the range. So I think it's going to be hard to say we're reflected in the purchase price, because, you know, it could be a range of factors, a range of synergies, and you might not have been pushed to a price that was based on achieving the absolute. But I think we have to be clear about it being expectations considered when pricing the transaction, so that it's the pricing date. That's the first attribute of the model that we're trying to build. And then thinking about Tom's comment about this, and as well as the communication concerns about one, you know, does anybody understand what one level means when you're just communicating it? Should we say, you know, total expected synergies disaggregated to show at least, you know, revenue and operating expenses. So that explains the one level below, as well as giving the total, which then leaves others, which may be the below operating expense. In terms of kind of a side observation, my understanding is that for many transactions, not all, and it may be depending upon both the market regulation and the significance of the transaction and the form of consideration, you know, are you issuing shares, are you paying cash, that information like this, despite it being commercially sensitive in some cases or costly to develop, is provided in the document that's sent to shareholders to ask them to approve the transaction. The issue that we have faced and are trying to deal with is, A, how clearly that's linked to the, you know, the amount paid, the assets and liabilities recognized in the amounts at which they're measured. So we're in part trying to draw, you know, look at drawing a link to something that is sometimes disclosed outside of the financial statements. So I think there is, you know, that's there is kind of, to me, other evidence about whether concerns about cost, including commercial sensitivity, you know, can be overcome on this. It's not part of this testing. But then the big question about how we think about this and how we communicate about it, and I'm reflecting on Bertrand's very deep concerns about this, is if we think about this as the building blocks of redeliberation, I can see that it could be both people could really dig in and resist working with us at this stage. And this kind of goes back to what Sue was saying. If we think about it as building blocks and decisions that are subject to testing, well, how about if we step back and say, as Nick points out, we had preliminary views. We had lots of feedback that were concerns about costs and questions about whether we had a good understanding of the benefits. In order to get a better understanding of those concerns about cost and benefits, we're trying to build some illustrative examples in general based on the preliminary views, you know, in the discussion paper, so that anchors it back in what we're saying, but not characterize it as building blocks of re-deliberation that are then subject only to, tentative, subject to evidence from this, know that we are the next step in our research. And so the wording in question two is, I think, inappropriate in the sense that it asks, does the board agree? I agree what's set out in question two, subject to clarifying those objectives, which is my first thing about the technical phrasing. I agree with it in terms of having a tool for going out and getting further information about costs and benefits. And I think it should be based on the preliminary views, because the initial thinking of the board is, no, we don't want to walk away from those. We want to, think about how we can build on them, subject to getting better understanding. But I wouldn't characterize them as tentative decisions subject to further evidence about testing. And making it clear that our redeliberation plan is, once we've got this additional information, to come back to these disclosure items and assess whether we should build requirements. Because I think we might, somebody just picking up this paper would say they're making tentative decisions that they're then going to test.
Yeah. And this was the purpose of my introductory remarks. And they were really in your direction, I think, and what Sue has described as being baby steps, really, in trying to get us to a set of tentative decisions, get us to it. And Bertrand.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about the illustrative examples. I'm thinking what it would be like if I received these materials and you want information from me about how I'm responding to these materials. So a few questions. When you give someone these materials with these example disclosures on synergies, is this going to be in a pack where they can see what other disclosures they have to do under our proposals?
The ones we've written so far have the synergies one and the kind of subsequent performance to illustrate it. It doesn't include some of the other requirements in IFRS 3 that are there already. So it doesn't include things like the what we'll call pro forma information that we discussed earlier and things like that. But
Okay, that's good. So they were the two things that I thought people needed to see, because you couldn't just give synergy what's happening to subsequent performance. You might also consider in the pack showing sections that just say, oh, there'll also be disclosure about management's objectives or management's metrics. I'm just reading from the DP here. It might be like they're in grey and they're not very detailed, but just so someone can actually see, because they, in the back of their mind, they'll think, but I already provide things under IFRS 3, and how's what I already do going to fit with what this example is? So there might be a way to make it a bit more looking a bit more like what the package of information would be in its totality, without going into all the detail, because I know you don't want to overwhelm your subject. So that's that thing. Are you looking at what people currently do to draw your examples? You're drawing from practice here?
Yeah, so we have looked at what companies are disclosing in kind of press releases and management commentary and things in the time of acquisition to try and draw things about synergies and other metrics that people might use to try and illustrate the consistent performance aspect of the board's preliminary view as well.
So one thing to think about, and this refers to Bruce's comment where you're talking about small, medium, large in terms of disclosure, whether you want to have an example that says, well, this we've observed this in practice. This is how it looks in practice now, albeit that was over in management commentary. It wasn't within financial statements, but that's how we see. And the extent to which you think that that might actually be in accordance with what the DP is asking for, so that someone might be looking at something and think, okay, someone else has done that, well, I never would have done that, or someone else has done that, oh yes, I'd be comfortable, I think that is something I can manage, so that you can get people know it's not just some fiction that we've dreamt up, that this is the actual practice for some people. So that leads to my third point, which is in terms of drawing people to participate in giving you the feedback, will you go to both the comment letters, the preparers that actually were saying positive things, because you refer in your paper to the fact that some preparers said at a particular level they could manage this, and then at the other end you've got the preparers who have been very vocal and adamant that they can't possibly do it. So I'm just wondering, are you trying to draw from both ends of this spectrum, so you do access these preparers who have said it's possible?
I mean, so far we basically started with GPF and invited GPF members. Mm-hmm. We haven't necessarily contacted all the comment letter respondents. But it's something that we can sort of consider.
Well, it just gives you an idea of people. And I suppose the other idea of people is that where you're drawing from practice, you're getting examples of disclosure from practice, so you know what people are doing. So that's another area you can draw from. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I think it is useful. As Bertrand has suggested, I mean, if there was a strong pushback, what we really want is to get a better understanding as to where does the pushback come from. Is it a particular requirement? Is it an overarching theme? What precisely is it? To then see, is there some middle ground, as Sue has put it, right? Bertrand, you want to come back?
Yeah, just because probably my prior comment was not clear enough in when I said that providing or disclosing budget and plan figures would provide an insight into the strategy of the company, and then Nick commented on that. So maybe to re-precise what I said at the time, or what I had in mind when I said that at the time. So for European Union companies, there is a directive on transparency that imposes the company, notably, to disclose a universal registration document each year. Its section one encompasses elements relating to the strategy of the company. So there are quite detailed information on the overall objective of the strategy of the company, on since the new management has been there, for instance, or since there have been a specific orientation given to this strategy, what have been the achievements made so far. There may be some forward-looking qualitative elements on what could be future steps, and then it stops there. So my comment was just saying providing figures would provide, of course, a detailed insight into what the precise next steps of the strategy could be. If you think of a company being a serial acquirer, based on the information you have provided on the overall objective of the strategy in section one of the universal registration documents, then having provided all the steps already taken in fulfilling this strategy, if you begin to provide figures, the competitors might think, oh yeah, the next step will be this acquisition, because they in no way can they really make a huge return in having made just this single acquisition. There will be a next one. And the next one could be, oh, what would be the spectrum of the acquisitions, of the potential acquisitions to be made? Yeah, let's do, it's a good idea. Let's do that before then. That's the concern we are talking about. So it's not providing insight into the strategy, because this insight, at least for European Union companies, is already provided. That is not to provide insight. That is to provide detailed insight into detailed future steps of either acquisition or organic development either, because it can be acquisitions or organic developments. We are focusing on acquisitions there, but it's the same for organic developments potentially. So just wanted to clarify my comments, which I appreciate was not very clear in the first instance.
Thank you, Andreas. Listening to what Bertrand mentioned and explained to us, that sounds very helpful, and we would like to have more evidence about what we can do to improve this disclosure about synergies. So I really hope the staff will use a good example to solicit the feedback from stakeholders.
That has been a good discussion. I tend to follow Mary here in her advice, in slightly rephrasing the question in order to take the emphasis away of us taking tentative decisions that might actually take us towards an end result. It's really a stepping stone to try to test what we have set out in the preliminary views document that we have received feedback on, and we want to get greater insight into what is that, what were the benefits, what were the concerns that were raised, and in order to flesh that out, be in a position to draft illustrative examples. And this would be a stepping stone towards this. So not to say whether we agree, subject to further research, but really agree that this is a useful stepping stone in actually obtaining further insights into the comments that we have received, to go back to preparers and to users to test whether there is some sort of middle ground. That's the purpose. Is that a fair reflection? I see nods around the table. So could I see a show of hands who, based on this rephrasing, could agree with the staff recommendation?
So we're using this level of analysis, synergies one level below, for that purpose?
Yeah.
But not on the basis of the way we put it, Christian.
No.
Better understand the concerns.
Exactly. So it's only that. It's not really making any decision.
11.
Okay. Thank you.
I still abstain. If it's counted as a no, I abstain.
All right.
Dubito ergo sum. I doubt, therefore I am.
Okay.
On to question 3, or topic 3.
Be brave.
Yeah, so the third topic we want to ask the board about is what the board meant by when synergies are realised. The paragraphs 36 to 41 contain our analysis on this question. And is our recommendation is the board not require an entity to disclose information about when the expected synergies are realised, but instead to require an entity to disclose when the benefits resulting from the expected synergies are expected to start and the expected duration of those benefits. I think I said expected too many times, but... our question is, what are your initial views, whether you agree with that kind of clarification?
Nick,
do
you
want
to start?
Yeah, thanks. So I think I probably do, actually. So if I look at paragraph 40, A and B, on A, quite often I see a time profile provided by a company in terms of when they expect to realise or to benefit from those synergies. That's not unusual to see. And then I think on B, that's one I struggled a bit with a little bit, but seeing there that you think about that could be an annual run rate, could be expressed in that way. But equally, some of those other categories that I talked about, perhaps CapEx and working capital, can be one-off benefits. So in that respect, I think it is helpful to differentiate things that are considered to be ongoing against one-timers. And so I think that fits into those categories A and B from my perspective as a way of categorising it.
So first I'm going to suggest that I'm going to think of this in terms of investigating requiring as opposed to just flat out requiring. Just save some time, I hope, down the road. And I would absolutely support this, but it's conditional on learning a couple of things. First of all, I think you'll need to investigate whether people will perceive this to be commercially sensitive, and to the degree that they do, or if they do, then could that be overcome somehow? So that's part of the investigation. Second one is, to what degree is an entity capable of providing reasonably valid estimates? And you provide some evidence that some entities are, and I have no doubt that some entities are. But, you know, is this most entities? Is it many entities, some entities, a few entities? Again, I think that's something that you would need to, if this was to be a more general requirement, we need to be confident that it's at least, say, many entities do it. another implicit assumption in here is that synergies are finite. Again, for most, probably needs to be, because you will find some groups, and some of the feedback we got, make the argument that they can be infinite. And if they're infinite, then their duration is, you know, meaningless. So there was, I think, that one. And so I think this one should be involve some outreach, just like the one before, not just a sort of in-house investigation. And you need kind of a plan for that. And I'd also point out that if you can do all this, there's a clear link to the question of amortization. To the degree that synergies are a large part of goodwill and you can specify that they're finite and you can specify duration, sounds like a fairly good basis for a meaningful amortization method. And so I think you ought to be, if you go out and do this, you ought to be kind of thinking about the amortization question at the same time, so you don't have to go out and do it again. So I have, you know, I think that this should involve some outreach on all those issues as well as your own thinking. But, I mean, if we could do that, it would be, I think, really, really good information. So I certainly support investigating it and trying to make that our goal.
Thank you. Bruce?
Thanks very much. I'm going to repeat what he said in terms of we're happy to investigate looking at this. And I mean, once again, I do think the question of commercial sensitivity does need to be considered here. I guess I just, the one thing that, and maybe it's leading a bit on from this discussion Thomas having. I mean, we talk here about the difference here, about so when I'm expecting the synergies to be expected to be realized, and then we say I'm going to change that rather than say about when these start an expected duration. I mean, it's quite a... I just kind of think of the granularity of that. So, I mean, if I do a business combination, to be able to say, I think it will start in 2 years' time and will continue for 6 years' time, well, I mean, that's quite a statement for somebody to make. And I guess the reason I say that is, and maybe this also leads, as Tom was saying, some of my views on why I would support amortization of goodwill, in that as time progresses, These things become very difficult to distinguish what was part of what was acquired and what was part of what was the original business. And I guess my challenge with that becomes that the further out this goes, I mean, I could say, look, I genuinely expect this to give me value over the next 20 years. But to kind of start talking about start dates and expectation of how long each of these things, I think is going to be very difficult for anybody to give. I really do. And so what I would support is I'd support doing, as Tom says, use this also as part of the investigation. I'd be very interested in knowing what preparers have done, because I've never seen anybody give it to this degree. So I think if we can include that in the model disclosures we're going to test, I'd be very interested in seeing if people turn around and say, it may not even be a question of commercial sensitivity. It may just get down to the stage of people saying, we just cannot get to a stage we can give you a duration of these things. There are so many variables that go into that, but the further out we get and the more these businesses become kind of integrated, the value of me turning around in 8 years' time and saying this is still there, I just think it's going to get tricky. But yeah, I mean, I would support, once again, happy to do the investigation on that.
Tadeo?
Thank you, Andreas. And I have similar comments as Tom and Bruce. I mean, that my point was more focused on duration of the benefits. I understand that synergies usually take some time to become. That's something reasonable to ask for. But I thought that it would usually be incorporated into the combined business. What I'm saying is that I would assume that it will last for subsequent years without necessarily within a time frame. For how much time this will last depends on how market evolves, how management manages it, and I would investigate whether there is a consensus that this part of the proposal of this disclosure is feasible. I mean, that I, in the end of the day, I'm just following and I'm echoing what Tom and Bruce said. Thank you.
Pika?
Thank you. I think if the expected duration of the benefit reasonably estimated, that means they can estimate the goodwill life based on that information. But considering the plasticity of the how entities normally determine the life of goodwill, I feel like the management estimate that things in considering a more comprehensive matters, not only just the synergies duration, but also other elements in the business's strategies. So I really, yes, want to see the feasibility of this expected estimate the expected duration as well as when the synergy expected to start. And also, I just wondering what the information they need to estimate that information if we require, and how the auditor look at this to be audited. So I just wonder the staff reach out to a group, different group of our stakeholders to make sure this is a feasible requirement to ask in our standards.
I agree with some of the comments that have been made about what might be realistic in terms of a sort of granularity perspective, but I still agree with the sort of direction of travel. But I think the main thing I like is the fact that we're not using the word realised, because I don't think people knew what it meant. And I wonder whether ultimately if we were just to tone down or adjust the proposal to say, when do you expect to benefit from the synergies, that might not have just dealt with quite a bit of the confusion, because I think it's this realisation notion that's tripping people up. And I think what's nice about what you've got here is explaining, you know, it's when you expect to start getting the benefit and how long you expect to get the benefit for. Ultimately, maybe we'll find out that that's too specific and too granular with those two very specific pieces. But if we get from it the fact that people understand what we mean, then that's a positive. So that's, you know, it's really losing the word realise I like, rather than the specificity, I think.
Yeah, I just want to refine my comments, having listened to others, and particularly what Bruce said. I think the duration piece may lead to spurious accuracy, to be honest. And for me, it's probably more of two buckets, things that are one-off and things which are considered to be more recurring is how I would be looking to use the information, I think.
That said, I'm probably going to reiterate what Sue and Nick just said. In my background, I was both a user and a preparer, just to be clear. And I was trying to think of how I would have operationalized this for the acquisitions I did, because the period at which you achieve the run rate isn't when you expect the benefits to start. And I think even the examples that I've seen from the staff recognize that and talk through that. So I think what that means for this is there's probably a need for some language that makes clear that we understand that these aren't precise. You know, we still want quantitative, but ranges are okay, time frames are okay. You know, we will begin to see benefits in 2 quarters, and we expect those to build for the following year or two. Probably the wrong point. I'm not sure the best way to do that, other than to say it's probably a qualitative description around the quantitative information.
So my comment would have been quite similar to what Zach has just said, because when I read this actually as an attempt to alleviate the requirement, because the requirement before was quite strict. Yeah, give me basically a table that shows exactly the years as to when benefits come through, or I expected to come through. This is actually taking a step back and saying, okay, tell me as of when you expect to see the benefits come through, and give me an indication as to how long you think you might be benefiting from them. Whether you take that as, is it a one-off, is it a recurring thing, is another issue. But I think if I really step back, this for me really ties into the stewardship aspect, right? Company management is spending money. So I, as a shareholder, want to know, when do you think we can be realizing some of the expected benefits that you're promising to us and to yourself by engaging in that business acquisition? It's not precise science, but it's really, what's the expectation as of when I get my money back? When do I see a return, right? That's really behind this, I think. And I don't think this is unreasonable. Whether we got the balance right is another issue, right? And this is, I think, again, exactly what we are trying to test out. This is how I read the proposal, really. And therefore, I'm quite sympathetic to the way how you phrased it today.
It's just to comment that when I actually myself was writing my comments here, I was really thinking that trying to put myself in the better shoes, it sounds like payback information. I don't think that this is the kind of information that should be provided. I mean, when I'm starting to benefit from this, because the term realize sounds like a payback. And then if I try to get rid of it, and then just to say when I start getting the benefits, and then not exactly in terms of the duration, but some insight information that would allow our users to understand and make his model to see whether this is something that is going just to be incorporated into the business, and then therefore it's just going to last forever, or whether it's some kind of one-off situation. But I struggle a bit with the term duration of the benefit because it just reminds me that, like, when you have the payback. I don't think that this is what actually the user are looking for. But I might be wrong because I'm not from the user's background. But my view is that definitely we just need to provide some insights about how this synergy will be incorporated into the business. Thank you.
Can I then test with our users, is it, because you, Nick, you said it's one-off or recurring, but am I right in saying even when it is recurring, there might be an end, it might not be infinite?
Yeah, but I think we come back to the same issue with goodwill. Trying to put a date around that is extremely hard.
Yeah, but the reason I'm asking is, one-offs are the easier ones, right? Because you clearly say this is one-off. But if you say we expect some synergies that we may be benefiting from, I might be interested in actually saying, is this only for a medium term, or would it be for longer term, or would it be into perpetuity? So
that's all then interesting information if it can be provided. I will then overlay my own judgment on that, of course, whether I think that's that makes sense in terms of my understanding of the competitive position of the industry and so on. I think it's just in terms of, I'm trying to think about what's reasonable to ask for at the same time. And generally when I see this type of information, it's not, I never see anyone say this is. I've never seen anyone say, and this is going to last. Well, perhaps it's a tax. You may say there's a tax benefit. It's a Randy Furr tax. It has a finite life to it. You could see that for things which are revenue or operating. I think it's highly unusual in practice to see people putting a termination date around it. I mean there may be circumstances. I can't think of any exactly, you may know.
Yeah, I think the presumption among most users is that unless specifically identified, it's presumed to be more or less indefinite. But what's important is flagging benefits that may go away. And the one-offs clearly go away because they're one-off deferred tax assets. And I think companies that provide this information generally do a good job of those. But if we're thinking about structuring a requirement, you want to think about whether, you know, something around delineating between things that are presumed to be run rate and things that can't be presumed to be that way is the important distinction.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. Mary?
Just thinking about the comments that have been made about duration, and I guess I'm looking at the wording of the question, rather than focusing on expected to start and expected duration, maybe tweaking it so that you say, you know, the objective is to disclose information about that enables users to understand when the benefits are going to start and how long they would last is kind of the objective. So that means distinguishing between one-off, you know, distinguishing one-off from continuing synergies, and then picking up on Zach's points. And if there are any expected end dates to identify those kind of thing.
So I would take that suggestion again. Thank you for helping me on that one, Mary. So if we rephrase question three slightly, in the sense that Mary has just proposed, in order to take up the comments from Nick and Zach and saying, really, don't be overly scientific in projecting a duration, but really say which of the things are one-offs or have a finite life and can be clearly identified, and the rest is presumed to be rather indefinite or infinite. Can I see a show of hands who would agree with staff testing those with preparers and with users? All right. Brings us to the last question.
Yeah, so paragraph 47 lists some other questions respondents raised on our analysis. And we recommend no changes to the board's preliminary view as a result of these comments. So our final question in the paper is really where the board agrees not to change anything in relation to preliminary views.
I just ask for a little precision. Not make any other changes relate to the 3 points
yep.
that are being flagged there, right?
Yep.
Okay, just to be precise. Mary?
I flagged it when we talked about the first point, but item two, I think we have to be clear, even in the context of this testing, about whether we're looking for information as of the date, what basically the offer date or the completion date. And I'm not so much arguing one versus the other, is saying I don't agree with the, I just wanted to flag that item two, the staff analysis seems to be that we would remain unclear, and I think we have to be clear about which we're aiming for.
Yeah, I had a bit of a problem with number two as well, because we have on the left-hand side the time of the acquisition and on the right-hand side the time of the business combination. So I don't know if we're talking about the time the deal's announced or we're talking about when the financial reporting is going ahead. So a little bit more clarity for us there, I think, would be helpful. In relation to item one, I did just want to quickly comment on that about, I agree with what you're saying, not making wider use of the CODM, because what we heard on Friday with the global preparers was some views, and you heard it, you know, some views saying that using this CODM idea is not going to get the disclosures that the board thinks it's going to get. And so there's complexity around using the CODM, and we know that from segment reporting anyway. So I was pleased that you were saying there was no need to go to CODM, because this was harking back to B64E. So I agreed with that.
Yeah, I would just reiterate what Anne said. Is when I initially read this, I was totally on board, particularly on number one. But we had two meetings last week with the users group, CMAC and GPF, who both seemed to call into question that presumption. I think probably one more forcefully than the other, but both in general agreement. So I've already discussed with some of the staff, but I think, you know, continuing to view this as something we test out is probably the way to go, because the more recent feedback has been different from what I thought going in.
Thank you. Tom?
Yeah, just on number two, I would again urge really precise language. You'll often hear people with concerns over the time you kind of initiate one of these things versus the time you finalize it. And typically, when we measure the goodwill is about when you finalize it. But I'd want to really distinguish between the measurement of the goodwill, which is a mathematical exercise, and an estimation of the synergies. So a lot of people will say, well, from the time we initiated, you know, it was a share deal, so our share price moved. And so the difference between what we paid, you know, that changed from when we started. Does it mean our estimate of synergies change? Right, so good, again, I'd really, when you go through, just be really careful about which one you're capturing, because I'd actually be surprised. You know, they probably did a ton of work to get the estimate of synergies. They probably had external advisors. And so if there's a delay in their share price change, did they go back to all these people and say, please re-estimate the synergies? Or did they just acknowledge that their share price changed and they're stuck paying more or less than they thought they were going to pay? And then, so that would matter a lot if you were doing the components of goodwill, because you now have this change that it was because my share price changed in the 3 months. So again, I'd urge precision about what the issue is. I actually doubt that the synergies that are estimated would really change all that much. But I think the goodwill calculation could change a lot, because you could have, you know, the price go one way and the valuations of the intangibles go the other way, and it could shrink, or, you know, if they get big.
Any more comments?
All right. Can I see a show of hands who agrees with the staff recommendation to pick up any of these?
Which one wants to turn, Joseph?
11.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. That draws to a close a more difficult paper, and I think we can now end this session. Thank you very much, team. Good job. I hope that we provided you with some useful feedback that enabled you to develop the proposals further. I would suggest that we now break for lunch, and that we get back. Let me just check. Yeah, I think we can probably, right? It'd be quarter past, that's right. So let's keep it with 45 minutes, and we return at 1:15. Thank you.